Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Rocket Mortgage. Confidence. Support for the Adam Carolla Show comes from our friends at Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Why can't clients get approved in minutes, not weeks? Or make adjustments to their rate and term in real time? Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans answered those questions and more. It gives you the confidence to buy a home or refinance your existing loan. Fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. That's right. That's what Rocket Mortgage does. Whether you're looking to buy your first home or your 10th, with Rocket Mortgage, you get a transparent online process. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. What else do you need to know? And again, these guys support the show and are great sponsors. So, Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. To get started, just go to rocketmortgage.com/Adam. That's rocketmortgage.com/Adam.
Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. From Carolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, comedian turned motivational speaker, Kyle Cease. With Gina Grad on news. And now, lather, rinse, repeat. Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but get it on mandate. Get it on. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for telling a friend. Thank you. Good day, Gina Grad.
Good day to you.
And Bald. Bald's at a wedding. That's all right. We'll hold down the fort over here. Kyle Cease is coming in. Kyle Cease is kind of interesting because he started off as a stand-up and then started sliding into motivational speaking. And then I started thinking, wait a minute, that's what I'm doing. It's all I'm interested in is people and how to motivate them. Weirdest part about motivating people is how much they fucking hate you.
You mean when they're not paying for the ticket to sit?
Yes, when they're not paying. If they pay you $500 for like the weekend and you walk on coals and you get the instructional cassettes at the end of the day, then they pay you. Yeah. If you offer the same advice for free, they hate your guts.
Yeah.
So you have to be at like a banquet
pushy
hall, the Ramada Inn.
Right.
But if you're in your living room,
oh,
it
ears
is wholeheartedly and wholesale rejected. So I always find that interesting because my feeling is it's not who's telling me something, it's what they're fucking saying. And then I'll pick and choose. I won't go, I'm not going to listen to you because you're this guy or that person in my life. Like, I can't listen to you because I'm 14 and you're my dad.
Right.
Or I can't listen to you because you're my principal. No. Pick and choose the things that the person has to say. As a matter of fact, remove the face and the messenger from the message and whatever side, or we do it politically a lot. You know, yeah. I'm not listening to this guy because look, you can't listen to anything Maxine Waters says. That's a bridge too far. But beside that crazy dingbat, anybody else who says anything, feel free to use it.
Yeah. And let it advance your life.
It's basically when, Jimmy gets his monologue and jokes together for the Oscars. He doesn't care. You know, he's got a bunch of writers. And I'm sure he has different feelings about different writers. I know he loves me and hates everybody else.
No, I don't think you're supposed to say that.
he probably has his feelings about this guy's, you know, believe me, I know Jimmy, and he'll think this guy's funny and that guy's not as funny, or this guy deserves to be here and that guy does. But you know what? All he does is pick the funniest jokes and use them. Does not care if one guy wrote all 18 jokes of the monologue, or each person, all 18 people wrote one joke, or one guy wrote the line. It does not matter. He just looks and goes, I want the best joke.
Do you submit those to him blindly? Does he know who's writing what jokes?
Yes, it's anonymity is very. Oh no!
I mean, does he just get a couple of pieces of paper with jokes written on it, or does he know?
No, he gets emails and they come from you, so he knows where they're coming from. But he just wants the funniest jokes,
sure.
And you should just want the funniest, best information for your life's monologue, regardless of who delivers that information. Yeah. But I have found a lot of people weigh in, and I get this a lot, and I don't get it. Like, you know, I'll get it, I'll talk to my dad, and I'll go, well, you have to understand, you and Ray have a history, and it's like, yeah, but I'm telling him something that's pertinent and works. Right, but you got to go back to the seventh grade. And it's like, why? Why does anyone have to go anywhere? Why can't you just listen to the fucking information and move on, or not? Why are we weighing in? Right. There's way too much weighing in.
Well, technically, you're weighing in to Ray's therapist.
Yes, but it is insane that we all, except for not really me, do this thing where it's like, I have to assess the history I have with this person in order to decide how I shall receive said information.
Right.
Versus receiving said information or not. Like, if you disagree with it, yeah. You know, if I'm preaching Santeria, you can go, no thanks. Not for me. But if I'm giving you a little tip on swishing out the coffee mug and not letting it just bakelize in the sink there, then maybe you go, thanks, hombre.
Thanks for the tip.
You show me somebody who has to decide where they're getting the information before they get it, and I'll show you a fucking loser.
Well, isn't that every single person on Twitter when it comes to politics?
Yes. And it's insane. And it's a way to stunt growth. Abso-goddamn-lutely. It's a really simple, and I wonder if more people shouldn't go through the process. I don't believe I've ever discussed playing Pop Warner football on this show, but
so.
Maybe it's come up.
Maybe in an archive somewhere.
Yeah, I could probably find it online somewhere on the deep net.
Dark web.
The dark web. But I started age 7 listening to people. Like, just do this, do that. Wrong stance. Don't put your fingers down. You're going to break your fingers. Put a knuckle. That's all it was. Just do this, do this, do this, do this. That's all it is. Never took it as anything other than the guy in the windbreaker wants me to excel. Once we get out on the field, that's it. And then later on, went right from the football field to the construction site. You go to the construction site, when you know nothing, you don't realize how much there is to know.
You could lose a hand.
How much of nothing you know and how much everyone else knows around you. Yeah. You just, nothing makes sense. When you want to cut your first 2x4 in half, or, you know, cut off 18 inches or 20 inches of your first 8-foot 2x4, you'll set it like between two sawhorses and start cutting down the middle, in which case it would just bind and the saw would shoot back into your lap. No, I'll show you how you cut a 2x4. It's a good pod, but you describe it and I'll show it to you.
Oh God, this involved. Oh, I thought this
first thing you do is you hold the saw in your right hand.
Okay,
even though I'm left-handed.
Me too.
The blade. Now they have left and right hand saws, but the blade is on the left hand of the saw, left side of the saw.
Okay.
If you can picture it. So if you're holding it with your left hand, you cannot see where the blade is cutting.
I get it.
So the first thing, just with the skill saw, high point saw, worm drive saw, it's a big, powerful, torquey saw. And the first things first is I was like cutting a 2x4 and I put it between two things. I was like cutting down the middle. The guy yelled at me. It'll bind and kick back because when the weight goes, it pinches the blade. Right. You cut a 2x4 by taking like the 8-footer.
It's getting up.
Getting up. Putting it there. Hanging it over your foot.
Over your foot and then just sawing
it with your right hand.
Toward the ground.
Yeah. The second you kick your toes up, you arch your foot up and you just get it off the ground and it doesn't pinch. The second thing they said to me is you're cutting with the wrong hand, you idiot. I'm left-handed. It's like, well, you learn to cut with your right hand. Then I put the blade. I changed the blade on the saw and I put it backwards. It looks like it should go forward like a car tire, like the way the teeth are in the blade.
Yeah.
It's the opposite. It goes the other way. Mm. Got yelled at 3 times. And I didn't yell, you're not the boss of me. All I said was, all right. And there's no way, because there's no books and no manuals. There's no anything. You just show up every single day. And some guy named usually Tom or Rick or Dave or Steve. Those are the three big carpenter names. They tell you what to do.
And they probably don't tell it super politely and quietly.
No. And if they don't know what to do, what you're doing, and they just, that's all they do is tell you what to do. And then all you do is imbibe. You just take it in. And then you get to the point where you want to show up the next day And when it turns out you're going to work with Rick, the Finnish carpenter, and you guys are going to scribe some baseboard, and he's showing you, get your scribe out, hold the baseboard along the whatever, here's how to cut it when you scribe it. Now you're kind of looking forward to it.
Yeah.
And it's a good way.
Makes sense.
Good way to go through life. Now, when you don't get that experience, you know, first half, 10 years of football, second half, 10 years of guys telling you what to do on a construction site, I'm not sure if you just sail through, you know, private school and head off to Ivy League. I don't know that you get that experience.
Well, I think that current events are telling us that you don't.
Yeah.
You got to go to a room and play with your Play-Doh.
Speaking of that, check out nosafespaces.com. And we're right at the halfway part of our crowdfunding, and we're right at the halfway point time-wise and money-wise, right? About 250 grand. We get to 500. Somebody is going to give us another five, which I'm looking forward to. All right. NoSafeSpaces.com. Lots of stuff to talk about, complain about, so I want to get into it with Kyle. Yes.
I forgot to tell you, and I forgot to send this to Gary, but I have another submission for your passive-aggressive radio station kitchen notes for your coffee table book.
Oh, yeah. Boy, this is... I'm loving these. This is... Anyone who's worked at a radio station, it's almost exclusively a radio station.
Yeah.
I get it. Everyone has a company kitchen with somebody who's got some issues. But the radio station is a cabin filled with insane people with issues. And it all seems to pour out in the fridge.
Yeah.
Also, I never really got the it's a weird, you know, there's a Mason-Dixon line, which is, if you're gainfully employed, you should go out to lunch every day. You should literally go across the street to the Chipotle and have your burrito. It's treat yourself.
Perfect.
It's fun.
Doing
it's
it
nice.
Anyway.
Get a couple of. The nice part about work is getting a couple guys or girls or whoever that you're going to go to lunch with
yeah.
every day. When we work construction, I remember being really embarrassed once I was low guy on the totem pole, and they said, we're making a Mickey D's run. And I said, where's that restaurant?
Oh.
And they're like, Mickey D's. And I'm like, I don't know what a Mickey. And I worked at McDonald's. No one ever called it Mickey D's.
Let me guess. You don't know Target either.
Yeah. But there's some good sandwich places. So make a run was always nice. And then you sit down and eat with the fellas. The worst part is when I was a bachelor and I was working up in the hills of Malibu, way up at the top of Mulholland, and there was nowhere to go. And everyone had to pack their own lunch, and I would just have a box of raisins and an apple. I wouldn't take care of my shit, you know what I mean?
That's a terrible lunch.
Yes, it's horrible. All right, so, but let me, I'll tell you this. I do not have a problem with the dudes that bring in the sandwich or the dudes that bring in the, I don't know, maybe it's their leftover burrito from last night or whatever. But when the guys start bringing in the crock pots and the lasagna and they really start whipping it up.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like that's just kind of crossing into some weird zone of, this isn't your fucking apartment, dude. And who said that you needed pheasant under glass for, like, you know, it's Tuesday, it's noon. Just go fucking get a burrito and eat it out in the parking lot, or come back and eat it in the kitchen or whatever it is. But you're bringing in multiple things of Tupperware.
Going full Julia Child.
It's a little intrusive.
Yeah.
It's a little intrusive. And it's also, you've crossed into some realm which is like, I don't know, be like wearing your bathrobe around at work or something. Like, we're not at your house. I don't know. Who are these people? It's an interesting breed of cat who basically, wherever they are, it's their home. Like, hey, I'm at the airport and the flight's delayed 20 minutes. Well, I'm going to bivouac right here. I'm just going to make a pillow out of my hoodie.
Chair
and I'm going to spread out my stuff here. And I'm just going to lay right in front of the Cinnabon. I'm just going to bed. Just put my earbuds in. I'm going to lay down. I'm going to bed. Step over me.
Yeah.
Like, who are these people? You go to the bathroom at the airport. I was there a couple weeks ago. Guys on the pot next to me, and I hear, and it's like, dude, you're not at. I get it. We all would like to make a little noise, but considering there's 26 other guys in this space, you don't think you can prevent yourself?
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's the ticket. Huh? It's like literally everyone's standing at the urinal listening to this guy serenade with his grunts. It's like... Now, you may say, okay, he's pushing, he's working.
He's had a tough morning.
I get it, but just...
Internalize. Whisper.
Bring it down.
Yeah.
Same thing with the company kitchen.
Yeah.
We worked with a guy named Domagoj. He used to bring in crock pots and lentil beans.
And really exotic spices.
Yeah. First off, who wants to smell curry at 8:47? Just permeating the entire floor. Like, it's one thing if it's 8 o'clock and you're going into the Indian joint and you got a beer in your hand. This is like Tuesday, 8:14 in the morning, and the place reeks of curry because he's cooking.
And you're assaulting K-Earth, too. I mean, it's one kitchen for two radio stations.
All the way. Yes, that's exactly right. All right. I want to hear this note. First, I'll tell you about my good friend Sarah Silverman, A Speck of Dust. Netflix original comedy special out now. Filmed in Los Angeles at the legendary Largo Theater. Great space there. First comedy special after her life or death health scare, which she talks about. So she also tackles topics from bedwetting to reproductive rights to Barbie's anatomy. It is all good. It's Sarah Silverman, Speck of Dust, out on Netflix now. Do we have a little snippet of that?
I'm just going to put a pin in that for a second and double back and say, that squirrel line, I would call that in comedy a throwaway joke. Like, I knew it was going to get a laugh when I said, like, she's obsessed with squirrels. She's kind of gotten me into it, too. But you just keep going to that main joke. That's a throwaway joke. It makes it extra cool. Now I've ruined it because I doubled back and, like, I'm, like, talking about it. Now it's ruined. It's not a throwaway joke anymore, but it was. And this is probably for two people in the audience, but I would say a throwaway joke is cool the way that it's cool, like, I play basketball. If you, like, during a pickup game, you make, like, a sweet three-point shot, and then afterwards, you don't smile. You just go right back into defense. That's the same coolness of a throwaway joke. All right.
Sarah Silverman, Speck of Dust, right there on Netflix. All right, so the note.
So this is what was left in the kitchen this morning. I'm not saying they don't have a couple of fair points. I'm just saying we had a note in the kitchen. It says at the top in big bold letters, no one in this office has been hired to, quote, clean up after you. And now it's bullet pointed. Do not leave empty cups next to the coffee machine just because you used it to fill your personal coffee cup with hot water and think the next person will use it. We don't know if your mouth touched it and we don't want to use it. Throw it away. Next one. You used a knife or big serving spoon. Wash it and put it away. Next one. You prepped your lunch or coffee and spilled it on the counter, clean it up! And then at the very bottom in bold, it says, we are here 8 hours a day. Have consideration for others in this office.
Yeah.
And these are all people, we all get along. We all like each other, but the notes keep showing up.
You know what I realize? Nobody ever writes one of these during the quiet moments of a Sunday morning when they're drinking their Sanka International coffee and looking at a pond as a flock of geese land on it.
Nope.
It's an impulse buy.
Yeah.
It's Joe Don Baker and his baseball bat, like walking tall. Like, they come into the kitchen, they see the cup, like, chung, they see this ladle with the gravy on, chung, and then they march with purpose right back. This is, you know, this is like a fight by the side of the freeway.
Right.
They don't plan on it a week. You know,
no.
I'll see you in the slow lane on the 405 at noon. It's an impulse buy. It is, I'm now going back to my typewriter and my computer, and I'm going to knock this shit out. I'm putting it up post-haste. I mean, from the time the guy sees the ladle with the gravy on it to the time this thing hits the fridge with the scotch. By the way, it would be a minute 21 seconds if the guy was able to find the scotch tape. You have to tack on 4 minutes because...
Rooting through
what's
drawers.
Right, another one called Leave My Fucking Scotch Tape in My Goddamn Drawer. That's going to be the next one, but it's an impulse buy, these things. And that's why they're always filled with exclamation points and stuff, and that's why they're always written. I'm totally convinced that if you gave anyone an hour cooldown period, you'd either get no note or a much different version.
Hey, guys,
of
just
the
a reminder.
Note. Yes. All right, Gary, you can pull that thing down. Thank you very much. All right. So I was thinking Well, it got me thinking about a few things, speaking of reading stuff. So, you know how I always tell everyone you got to profile. You must profile. And then and the truth will be found in the profile. Everyone has a pattern. Everyone works the same way. It's not necessarily good or bad. It's just here's the way this person works. You then profile that person. Bald Brian is never late. So when we were getting started this morning, of course, I can't remember who's what schedule. It's everyone's schedules all over the place. So I forgot, was not told that Bald Brian, or reminded that Bald Brian was not going to be here today, which no big deal. But when I looked up at the clock and it was 1 minute after the show was supposed to start, Bald Brian wasn't here. I was like, where's Bald Brian? And I pretty much knew the answer wasn't going to be running late. Right. The answer's at a wedding, which by the way, fits perfectly for Bald Brian's jam. That's Bald Brian. Bald Brian's jam is I'm never late, but I'll always be in the Bay Area spending money I don't have. That's his jam. Like, if you say, like, when literally, if we ever do a show that's out of sequence, like I have to tape one because I'm going to be out of town, I don't go ask everybody. I go ask Brian.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go ask Brian. And literally, there's two of these shows we're doing, like, out of sequence, and Bald won't be here for either one of them because he ain't around on the weekends. He's
wedding or Warriors tickets.
He's hitting the road. So the patterns. Always study the patterns. So this reminded me of something. So there's a really cool website. It's called Bring a Trailer. And it's like a car auction site, and they put cars on there, and they do it in kind of a fun way. Gary, you got Bring a Trailer? There you can find Bring a Trailer. And it's fun. You look at these cars. They have like a countdown. They have the bids. They have the comments. They have the whole thing. And it's a car guy thing. But I am selling Jim Fitzgerald's 280ZX race car. And I've driven it a few times. I'm just making some room, and I'm looking for some other cars. And Jim Fitzgerald is Fitzy. Fitzy is Paul Newman's driving partner, and Fitzy died in a Trans Am race where Newman was driving another car in 1987. So if you watched a doc, that's Fitzy.
And that seems like your most familiar car.
That's his car. Oh, it's the car that Phil was stuck under.
Oh, that's probably why.
It's got some history. Fitzy is the winningest driver in SCCA history, Sports Car Club of America, or whatever it is, history. He has the most wins. Oh. And this is his car, and I'm selling it because I'm looking for other cars and making some room and blah, 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 blah. But as I was thinking about it and thinking about patterns, and I don't want to do a commercial for it, but Japanese cars, and especially Japanese race cars and vintage race cars, have gone through the roof. So if you're looking for a decent investment, you can get this thing relatively cheap. And if you want to go out and race it, go race it, man. I've raced it at Laguna Seca and at Sonoma and done a few events in it.
What's the reason behind that? Is it just it's time?
There's a Newman car that I'm looking at and gunning for, and this car ain't going to cover it, but it's going to cover part of it.
Okay.
And I'm just trying to kind of narrow down the collection. I don't drive this car that much, and I need some room, and I'm focusing a little more on Newman race cars, although this is Newman's driving partner. So I took it out for the first time to the what I call the rich white guy race. they get Laguna Seca, legendary track up north here, and a bunch of guys sign up, and they show up in crazy, crazy, crazy expensive cars. Some not so much, like me and my Datsun, but then they're literally $40 million Mercedes, like on loan from the museum, that the guy's going to get out there and work. And sort of everything in between. And it's not really a race. It's just kind of a two-day track day.
Parade.
Get some. Well, you're going. The guys are going hard. Like, I saw a guy roll an Audi at the Corkscrew. Guys are going hard, but But you're not going out and running it like a race. You're just going out on the track and you're running by yourself. So I went out in one of my second runs or fifth runs or whatever the hell it was in the Fitzy car. And I went out on the track and I started and I took a lap and then I took another lap, I think, and at some point I did what they call a tank slapper. It's when the car gets really loose and starts sliding one way and then whips back and slides the other way. And I was able to regain control of the car. And then on the way around for, I think, my third lap, I saw, after turn four, I believe, sitting right in the middle of the track, a huge tire gauge with the hose and the gauge on it and the whatever. And I thought, well, where'd that come from? And by the way, I'm going 100 miles an hour. So this is what I thought 100 as I passed it, 100 miles an hour. And I thought, everyone here has their shit together. There's semi-trucks and multi-million dollar cars and crews. And everybody here is smart and professional. Why is that tire gauge sitting out on the track? And I surmised that, well, somebody was checking the tires and they set it down inside one of these big, deep rims and it sat in a rim and popped out. Threw it on the roof of one of the cars when they were checking, putting the net up for the guy, and then the guy took off. But then I still thought about it and I went, we're the only dumb people here. I remember thinking, me and Les and my guys, like, we're the only fuck-ups out of this. This entire group's a bunch of seasoned, super rich, super experienced. And the thing about these guys is everything has its place. Everything has a procedure.
Right.
Because we're the only guys who go out and do a race and go, oh, shit, we forgot to put the net up before you went out. Yeah, next time. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, we're the only guys who do that. Everyone else has all their procedures because it's like a pilot or something.
Someone's checklist.
Someone's going to get killed if you don't take care of it. But how can this big tire pressure gauge be from us? Because I've already done three laps. If Les set it on the roof of the car, the hood of the car, stayed in the inside the big BBS rim, it would have flown out the first
way
lap.
Way earlier.
So somebody's a fuck up. And this time, as a little change of pace, not us. Turns out there's some other fuck up here at this track. We're not the only fuck ups. So, I'll let you know what happened. Gary, I'll tell you why the profiling always works, even when you do yourself.
You okay with a little head on this
one? Yeah, you can put a little head on it. This is from 2012. This is that Fitzy car.
In my mind, this tire gauge could have nothing to do with me because I had driven a lap without seeing a tire gauge on the track. And then come around again and seen a tire gauge on the track. Right.
And it
and
was in the middle
of the track at all given
the
time.
Track.
So
it is. If you rewind this tape a little bit, Gary, you will see a big tire gauge right in the middle of the track. It's funny, too. It wasn't off to the side. It is dead nuts in the middle of a straightaway.
Almost as if it was placed there.
Yeah, it literally couldn't be, you know, I would just call it the center of this racetrack. And I'm like, what? How's this here? Now, Gary, I don't know if you go earlier than this, the lap before this, you will see the tank slapper on the same turn. And maybe you guys are starting to put together a little picture.
Is that gay slang?
Tank slapper.
I'm just going to write it down.
I like it. I'll tell you, I'll give you an ending to that. I'll also tell you something else that was pretty funny. I think Gina's got an article in front of her that happened that same weekend. But again, why you need to always profile and always profile yourself. Like, I literally went past that tire gauge at 110 miles an hour, and I just went, well, there's another fuck up here this weekend. It ain't just us. Because we're the guys that are like, can we borrow a crescent wrench? And like, where's your crescent wrench? We left it at the shop. Like, hey, do you have duct tape? Can we borrow some duct tape? Like, that's us. Like,
are you guys sure you're at the right place?
No matter what we do, we always have to borrow something or get something from somebody or have him explain to us something. All right. I'll tell you the other thing that happened while Gary finds the tank slapper. Oh, he's got it. All right. I'll still tell you about Ward Kovalev, too, man. The rematch live on HBO pay-per-view Saturday, June 17th at 9 Eastern, 6 Pacific. I invited Sly to this.
Oh, yeah?
I'm getting the event. We'll see.
You think he's going to come? You put on your pretty
dress. He's like Johnny Drama. Like, where is it? Like, the Valley. The Valley. These guys, they're Niagara Falls. It's a Three Stooges bit, but I mean, it's like you tell people who live over the hill, like, I'm in the Valley. Oh, God. And it's like, dude, I go over there all the time for stuff. They're like, yeah, that's right, you do.
Because you have to.
That's what you have to do. Like, all right. Boxing's number one, number two, pound for pound fighters. Battle it out for the top spot. And there is bad blood. Last fight ended in controversy. Kovalev knocked him. Call him the Crusher.
Oh.
Knocked him down, I think, the second round. But Ward got back up on his horse and outpointed him, man. Right. Or at least that's what the judges said. Pretty controversial. Anyway, order today through your TV provider or go to InsideHBOBoxing.com/WardKovalev. K-O-V-A-L-E-V 2. Plus, you can tune into Facebook Live on our Facebook page and watch the fight along with me and my friends. I think I know Cousin Sal and the usual suspects are going to come out, maybe Bill Simmons, guys like that, watch the fight, and then I'll just be hitting it live on Facebook. Order the fight on HBO pay-per-view and watch it with us on your device and watch for round-by-round commentary, analysis. What could be better? That's inside HBOBoxing.com/WardKovalev2. Get that pay-per-view. Follow along. Also, going to be signing on 30 minutes before the fight as well. So, and you know, it's always fun. We got a good group of guys, a couple of beers.
Keep Sheck going to be there?
Sheck should be. I'll invite Sheck, and we'll see. I never know. People are out of town, traveling around, whatever. All right, here is, you can go to adamcarolla.com and watch this if you want, but it's basically the same corner the lap before when the tires were a little cold and I got a little loose. That's Laguna Seca turn something.
Good. Yeah, well, we'll just listen for it. I get a little loose. Turn it up if you got it.
Ooh. Whoops, 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 whoops. It's like a drunk guy.
Yeah, so the car,
that was a lot of,
yeah,
got him real loose and then came back the other way and then went back the other way. And
that was like a small stroke. That's what it looks like in the POV shot.
Yeah, if you're inside the car, you see a lot of frantic wheels spinning around. Now, the problem is obviously it's not on track alone. The problem with the vintage race is a bunch of cars around you when you do that. Right. So that makes it more difficult. But that happened the lap before, which gave me a little adrenaline rush. But then the next lap, I saw it. Now, Gary, if you find a picture of said vehicle and the rear wing, you'll now, as Paul Harvey would say, yes, that's good. You'll now have the rest of the story. The rear wing of the car is essentially a serving tray that has a high lip all the way around it. Of course, when Les was checking the rear tire pressure, he did what Les does, which is he set the gauge on top of the car. Now, here's the whole thing. Whether it's you're at the barbecue and it started at 4 and you're partying and drinking and you're wearing your shades out by the pool, and then at some point you come walking into the house and you realize, oh, it's getting dark outside, so you take the shades off and you go, I'll just set them on top of the bar here.
I'll remember
that after 13 more beers and an Uber call. No, you won't. It's dark outside and you're buzzed. The whole key is don't put it there in the first place. Don't ever... Unless there's a reason you need the tire pressure gauge to be on top of the rear wing of the car. And if there is, or your sunglasses to be on the counter of your friend's house when you're drinking. If there's a reason, fine. If you can't think of one, that thing, the deal is the tire pressure gauge never goes on the car. It just goes on the ground or whatever. Now, what happens? Well, you know my theme. People think they're better than they are. They go, I can set my sunglasses here.
I'm not an idiot.
And maybe you can. But then what happens when you set it there and a minute later some guy yells, hey, we're going, for, you know, get the net up. And you go, hey. Right. This tire pressure gauge sat on my rear wing, made it for a lap and a half, and was only and threw a corkscrew. The corkscrew's a crazy turn, and was only shaken loose when the car was violently broke loose and then whipped back the other way and then snapped back the other way, and somehow it threw it off that back tray and landed right in the middle of the track. Now, of course, I wasn't connecting my tank slapper with this tire gauge.
Appearance, yeah.
Yes. So while I had the thought at 110 miles an hour, somehow this has to be ours because we're the only fuck-ups here, it was quickly erased because there's no way I drove two laps on this track and did not see this tire gauge sitting in the middle of the track. Now, you have to also understand that people are getting onto the track all the time, one after the other. So somebody just got on after me. They left the stupid gauge inside the wing, and I'm going to go find them and make fun of them when I get back to the pits. Well, when I did get back to the pits,
there was a full-length mirror.
Well, it was comical because Les had been bragging about his new cool tire gauge. When we got to the track, it's a nice piece. I mean, look, you can spend $4 on a tire gauge or you can spend $65. Yeah. Like, they have nice ones. This
apparently
was a
it holds
nice one.
Still pretty well.
Yeah. And he was literally bragging about it when we rolled in. And then later on, I think I said to him, like, where is your tire gauge? And he's like, I don't know. It's lost. And then I'm like, I think I know where it is. And then snap and focus. We are the only fuck-ups in this group. All right.
Just as you suspected.
Yep. I got some calls there. One of the funny things from the event, there are these guys you guys should read up on called the Whittington Brothers. The Whittington Brothers, well, there's that new Tom Cruise movie where he's like the arms and drug dealer.
Barry Seal.
Barry Seal.
Really?
That's not the name of the movie. Oh. That's the name of his character.
These guys are like,
terrible name,
Barry Seal times two. They're pilots. They were running guns to like Sandinistas or something, and they started figuring out pretty quick. American Made is his movie. They started figuring out pretty quick that they should go there and drop off guns, but why come back with an empty payload?
Oh.
So they filled it with drugs.
That's entrepreneurship.
And they bought. I'm pretty sure this is the story. They bought the racetrack Road Atlanta, and they would fly back two airplanes, and they would fly like right under one above each other, so they wouldn't be picked up as two planes on the radar. And when they got to Road Atlanta, one plane with drugs would land in Road Atlanta on the track, and the other would land at the airport, and it'd be empty. But the Road Atlanta one wasn't empty. And they liked powerboats, and they liked fast cars, and they liked everything. And the Porsche 935 that won Le Mans outright in 1979, it's the last time a production car won the race outright. It's all prototypes now. All crazy, nutty. The first
souped up
20 cars souped up.
Is that what it is?
That's good.
Is that not what
yeah, I think they took the muffler off.
Oh, okay.
The ones that win are spaceships.
Okay.
They don't, there's no, I'm probably explaining this, but I'll try to do it quickly. The GT cars are a car that exists on the street that are completely and insanely modified. The Porsche 911 that doesn't resemble a Corvette, like the Corvette I drove, doesn't, it looks like a Corvette, has nothing to do with a Corvette.
Okay.
But then when you get into the prototypes, that's something you've never seen before. That's just a spaceship that's made to go fast. If you see a prototype, if Gary shows you a prototype, a Le Mans prototype, you'll just look at that car and go, I don't know what that is. I'll tell you, it's a Peugeot or an Audi. And you'll go,
all right.
I don't know.
It you say
looks
so.
Like a spaceship if you just go, Le Mans prototype. Anyway, this guy in this car, and there you go. Just
wow, looks like Transformer.
Yeah, it looks like Transformer. So, now, those cars are going to be, they're going to, there'll be 15 of those cars will finish before the first 911 Porsche finishes.
Right. Okay.
It's not a spaceship. Back in 1979, the prototypes were around, but they weren't quite as prototype-y, and a lot of them broke down. And so the last production car to ever win Le Mans outright was the Whittington Brothers 935 Porsche. The car that came in, second was my car. It's the Newman 935, and won its class because it was in a slightly different class. Anyway,
it's pretty cool.
This guy that I know named Bruce, who's a rich white guy, showed up at the rich white guy race with his freshly restored Whittington Brother 935 Porsche, which could have a value of, I don't know, I would estimate between $5 and $10 million, because Jesus, it's the last production car to ever win Le Mans outright. So, or maybe more. I don't think the guy's selling, but he had it at the track. He bought it for God knows how much, paid a guy God knows how much, hundreds of thousands of dollars over the course of a couple of years to do a full restoration. Now he brought his baby to the track. And somebody, well, you can go ahead and take a look. I'll tease it. We'll bring Kyle in a second. But you have an article there.
I do.
I was there when the article that you have, what happened after this guy went to Laguna Seca. Now, remember, the car won the race in 79 and then was never really seen again. And then this guy, Bruce, found it, did a full restoration, and now he's going to unveil it for the first time. First, tell you about Caesar's Palace, Las Vegas, man. I am, this ain't lip service. We went there and had the time of our lives. Newly renovated rooms and suites, the Monte Cristo Cigar Bar, walk-in humidor, rare whiskey selections, sports book with 143-foot HD LED screen, biggest on the strip. Unbelievable. And then you didn't think it could get better. The Who is in residency at the Coliseum. Shows start this summer, and Gordon Ramsay's opening a kitchen. I think I went to Mr. Chow, went there. Get the duck. Get the duck, man, at Mr. Chow. Special room rate.
Paging Dr. Freud.
Yeah, maybe get lucky and get a room rate over there. Yeah, right through August 31st, just for our listeners, up to 25% off when you use the promo code Adam. Book now at CaesarsPalace.com. Offer ends July 14th, and we're doing a live podcast there Thursday, July 13th. For tickets, visit AdamCarollaVegas.com. Really nice, and real enjoyable, and bring the family, man. There's tons of stuff to do there now. All right, you got that article there?
I do.
All right.
So this is Bruce Meyer's recounting of the story.
Yes, he's the guy who owns the car.
All right. He says, during the test day at Laguna Seca, DEA agents approached me and asked if I was Bruce Meyer. They arrived with a black Chevrolet Suburban with U.S. government license plates, a black Dodge Charger, and a blue car hauler. The three DEA agents were armed, badged, and quite serious. At first, I thought it was a joke, but it got more intense with each passing minute. With all that has been publicized about the Whittingtons lately, about the government seizing and confiscating their assets, I was convinced the DEA was rounding up anything and everything with a nexus to the brothers Whittington. It also occurred to me that although the chain of ownership and paperwork clearly shows me as the rightful owner, it could take forever to get this car back. The DEA agent loaded up the car with the help of several race team crews, gave me an official-looking U.S. government receipt for confiscated property, and left the paddock. It was very upsetting. Ready for part two?
Yes.
All right. Well, after what Meyer said was an eternity, the DEA car hauler brought the Le Mans winning Porsche 935 K3 back to Laguna Seca. Thankfully for him and for his Porsche, the whole DEA takedown was an elaborate hoax. The work of Bruce's good friends, Bruce Canepa, Charlie Nierberg, Chip Connor, and Al Arcerio. The DEA, quote, agents were actors flown in from Hollywood, and the lead agent was an attorney in real life, no doubt making his use of legal language all the more believable. possible. This epic prank took months to put together, and Bruce Canepa, the mastermind of the Big Sting, said that so much work went into this, it felt like a full-time job over the last few weeks leading up to the big day. There was even a rehearsal the day before, all to make sure that it was as realistic as possible.
So I was there. They were loading this thing onto a flatbed and taking it out. And it's, you know, people can say, you know, whether it's this or, you know, me and the Dixie Chicks, like, oh, why did you... Why wouldn't you believe this? The Whittington brothers smuggled tons of drugs and ended up going to prison and owed, you know, the old Uncle Sam, I'm sure, millions in tax restitution and stuff like that. Why wouldn't you want their $7 million car?
And that would be a terrible time for you to go, come on, you guys are fucking with me.
Yes. Yes, it was perfect.
That's great.
I was just there watching. I'm still upset about my $60 tire pressure gauge, but that's a good.
Let's take the sting out.
This rich man, poor man, running an elaborate con.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. French Stewart will tell you that.
I also wish, I don't feel like this would ever happen in the Middle East, and I lament that. I feel like we are number one when it comes to pranks and goofs and whatever, because it's basically a large expenditure of time and money for no return other than you laughing your ass off and having a story. And I feel like you got to arrive as a country to get to that place that we can spend a lot. It's like TPing a house. Other places haven't got to the place where they can just take full rolls of toilet paper and chuck it into the air.
Yeah.
We have. We're there now.
It's a little gross, but it's awesome.
Yes.
And that we're able to do that.
Yeah, it is, and it is, and I just like the fact that, you know, this guy had to get a flatbed, had to get a van, had to hire people.
Actors.
Awesome, awesome. But you go, you spend all this time and money with what return? The return is it'll always be a funny memory.
Yeah, we're talking
always
about
funny. All right, let's see real quick. Kyle Cease is out there. I'll talk to Tom, 31 Florida. Tom.
Ace Man, what's going on, brother?
What's going on, man?
Not much, just a quick question. What's the most embarrassing time you can remember when you farted?
You have to be able to get embarrassed when you fart.
Yeah, there's a few, but the one that just sort of stands out, I don't know, it's just because, is my friend Alex Arado had lived up in the hills. He had a nice house. I stepped into the living room, sort of a long living room, and it had a TV at the end and a sofa that was sitting in front of the TV. And I looked around, standing behind the sofa about 10 feet. I said, place is empty. Let a huge fart go. And then Alex walked in the room as I was farting. And it was so loud that I actually kind of went like, where's your mom? Like, is she upstairs? Like, where is your mom? And I just said, where's your mom? And I just saw this hand slowly come up from the sofa. She was laying on, obviously I couldn't see her because she was laying flat on the sofa and resting or something. Like, if she was sitting up and watching TV, I'd walk in and see the back of her head, but she happened to be laying there. And somehow the way her hand just slowly, she didn't say, I'm here. She just, her hand just came up from behind the sofa.
That's so delightfully sitcom-y.
Yeah, it was very sitcom-y. Gina Grad, fart story?
Yes, please.
I can't. I honestly, and maybe it's just because I'm too traumatized by this subject, I can't think of a personal one, but I can think of something that I think is far more embarrassing. When I was in college, my boyfriend and I were, having an intimate moment in what I thought was an empty room, because that's what I was told by him at his apartment. And I had a feeling we weren't alone, but I couldn't prove it. It was dark. He said we were. And I was proven right when his roommate, who was hiding in the corner of the room, farted really loud. So that was a pretty good one.
Now, wasn't he trying to hide and watch, right?
I guess.
Well, he would have.
There's a lot of weed involved.
But the fart, that's a tell.
Yeah.
Gary, you got one?
Yeah, mine's not maybe as good, but I was standing around with a group of coworkers who were all very close to me, kind of like, you know, the guys around here, Gina. And one of them was a woman who I was extremely comfortable with, and I absentmindedly lifted my left foot about two, 3 inches and ripped a very loud fart and did not address it until her face turned completely red and she started... thankfully laughing, but
that's good.
That one was pretty embarrassing.
You can get a little too comfortable. I have found the most dangerous territory in terms of embarrassing farts is if you are single for a while. Back in my bachelor days, you know, I might be single for a year or something. I'd have long dry spells. And then you meet somebody, and then they sleep over for the first time, and you've put together 400 days of sleeping alone. And now maybe you've had a couple of beers or some drinks and had some whoopee, and you go to bed at like 2, and it's 5:30 in the morning, and you're just laying in your bed in your
doing
spot.
Doing what you do, yeah.
And you feel something building up a little down there, and you just crank it out. Because you're half asleep and you've been doing this every night at 5:30 for the last 400 days. And it's always like mid-cheek. We had the tank slap or the cheek slap. It's like mid-cheek slap where you realize, oh, my God, there's a human being in the bed with me because you're just out of it enough.
It's terrifying. It's a terror feeling.
Yes. That is, I always, there's also the nerve gas fart. This is the very long date. With the exotic food and the movie and the cocktails and everything, also a nice little makeout sesh at the end, and then at some point when the guy climbs into his car to leave, when the door shuts in his car, there is a 30-second fart that is going on because you guys started at 6:30 or 7 o'clock that evening. It's now 2:30. And this guy's been holding it, and it's a 5-stage fart. It is 5 or 6 farts daisy chain. And I can guarantee you, if any woman on any first date, like after the guy, you know, nice if you make out, the best, no sex, but let him in and you guys kind of bump and grind on the sofa for a while. And then at a certain point he leaves and you walk out the porch and he gets in his car and shuts the door. I guarantee if you come running up to the car and go, I just want to give you something, he'll talk to you through the glass. What is it?
Roll down. I want to tell you something.
I can hear you.
No, this is like a secret.
I can hear you fine.
I'm sorry. This is you're ruining the moment.
Oh, I left my sweat jacket in there.
Yeah.
Just go ahead and drop it in the UPS. Just send it.
You're kind of making it sound like you're never going to see me again.
Just go ahead and I'll tell you what. Just set it on the curb.
Okay.
I'll come by in about an hour and pick it up.
You know, I really thought we had a good time.
No, we had a great time. Just set it down, walk away. I'll tell you what. Set it on the roof of the car, like Les did with the tire pressure gauge, and just walk backwards to your house. And then once you get 20 feet away, I'll just unroll the window 6 inches, I'll reach up and grab it and pull it through.
I've never been on a date like this before.
I'm not farting. I definitely was not farting in
I'm
here.
I'm sorry, what?
Every guy knows that nerve gas make out fart thing. As a matter of fact, if women were apathetic and kind, as they claim to be, they would say about halfway into this has got to be dinner, movie, makeout sesh with some drinks and some appetizers. About halfway into the makeout sesh on the sofa, I understand you would like to fart right now. I would look at it as you doing me a favor if you'd like to get up and go into that hall closet right there. Just close the door. I'll turn up the Enya. And you just go ahead and evacuate. There will be no judgment. We'll just go simply evacuate all the gas that's inside you, and then you may return and have a more comfortable session. I do believe most guys would say thank you and go stand up and go in the closet.
Adam, after all of the years and all of the issues of Cosmo and Teen Girl and whatever, all these magazines say this is how you get a guy to propose to you, you just nailed it.
Yeah.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah. They say the weight of a man's heart is to his stomach, but to his brain is his bowels.
Yeah, his lower
and you're looking
GI
to get
track.
To his brain. Yeah. You know what I mean? And I don't know a guy who's not had that nerve gas experience. And there's no place once you guys, you know, go out to eat.
That's it.
Between the movie and the front porch and her sofa and the car ride, there ain't no place to let it fly.
Yeah.
All right. Why don't we bring in Kyle Cease, by the way, and I'll mow through a few more of these phone calls. Joe, Oregon.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yeah, man.
First, thank you guys so much. I don't know if you know how much your show means to people who like work every day, so just thank you for like killing so much time.
I love that story. Thanks.
I got a better one.
Go ahead.
Okay, so me and my buddies are up skiing. We ski every weekend. Me and my best friend are up at the top of this mountain. And
there's this mountain called Hoodoo in Oregon, and there's a super steep run. Well, this day, there's all these like a crew of disabled people there. So this guy's paralyzed from the waist down skiing. So they sit on these chairs, they strap in, and they bomb down the mountain. And these guys, we get up to the top, and this guy starts going down the steep, one of the steepest runs in like all of Oregon. And me and my buddy Brian are watching him. And he, like, takes a digger. He, like, total yard sale. Like, goggles fly off, poles go flying everywhere. So me and my buddy Brian ski over to him real quick. And we're like, oh, my gosh, sir, are you okay? Are you okay? And he, like, he's laying face down in the snow. And then he leans up real slow. He's, like, squinting his eyes, and he looks at us, and he goes, I can't feel my legs.
I love
like,
this
So
man.
My buddy Brian, he didn't get it at first, and, like, he was freaking out. He thought we just watched this guy get paralyzed, but it was pretty good.
It also says here you get drunk and like to yell Kong Skull Island, or you have your own Kong Skull Island.
Well, I thought you were going to mow through some calls, so I skipped to the good story.
Okay, that's fine. But, it is fun. Watch, get drunk, watch Kong Skull Island, and yell Kong Skull Island every time, then have a drink. Kyle Cease is here, everybody. Good to see you, man.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Very interested in Kyle's move toward motivational speaking. Has a book out. I hope I screw this up. How Falling in Love with Your Fears Can Change the World. Available now on Amazon. Yeah, hold on, Gary. Gary wants to know about the other calls. I just feel bad because it's been on hold for 1,000 years. So let me just mow them real quick. Matt?
Hey, Adam, Ball, Gina. Nice to talk to you.
Yeah. I got it. Yeah. Yeah. Vitor Belfort travels with an emotional support dog. He's an MMA fighter. Yes?
Yeah.
I don't like it.
Next.
And by the way, I saw a picture of the guy who got mauled by the dog on the plane, and that super puss piece of shit doctor, they broke my nose. Yeah. This guy really had a nose that was screwed up. The piece of human garbage doctor who cashed in on $2.5 million and have shit done to him. Fucking little piece of shit coward. But this guy legitimately was...
got mauled in the face.
Mauled in the face. All right, line five's gone. Good. Kyle, sorry.
Hi.
I'm told I got a new bio coming in. So I'm very much into this. As a comedian who found himself just kept getting into motivational stuff, I found myself just going this way. Was that what happened with you?
Well, I actually call myself... It's funny because it's not really a name you hear much, but transformational. Motivation to me is when you're kind of thinking to yourself, when something happens, I'll be happy. And I think that's where everybody is constantly living. And I have had that happen so many times as a stand-up comic where I was just like, when I finally get this Comedy Central special or when I book this movie,
then my life will start.
Yeah. And then I would book it and I would actually be more enslaved to it because I'd be like, if it just does well, or if I just, you know, if it becomes number one, and then if I just get another one. And eventually I started realizing I'm constantly thinking that thing outside of me is my source of happiness. And then you go to a comedy club and every comic's totally depressed with amazing credits and an amazing life, and they're like, ugh. You know, I remember once being in a car and one guy's like complaining that he doesn't have enough colleges, and the other guy's is upset that he's not doing the Montreal Festival, and both of them have the other person has the thing that each wants, but no one's just excited about where they are. So for me, there was this revelation in me that was that this illusion is when something happens, I'll be happy. And I started realizing when I just don't care at all, it switches to when I'm happy, things will happen. And by happy, I mean okay with being sad, okay with every part of myself. And so at one point, I had 2 Comedy Central specials and all kinds of stuff. And I just started actually realizing it's not about making it happen. It's much more about letting go. And so I started combining comedy and transformation. And at one point, my mind was like, well, no one's ever done that I know of the way that I want to do it. And my heart was like, no one's ever done that. And so now I do this thing called Evolving Out Loud, which is comedy and transformation together. And we do 1,400 seat theaters. And it's so much bigger as a byproduct. but I'm not doing it for the results. I'm doing it because it's just more my truth, and the byproduct is the results.
September 9th and 10th, by the way, at the Alex Theater here in Glendale, California. Tickets available at the website. Enter the promo code Adam and get tickets for just $99. This is a big deal, and I'm so, as poor Gina will attest to, I'm so fixated on this, the informational part of life. Hmm. There's so much. I was in here about a week ago, although it's almost every day, and I announced to the heavens, how come no one ever picks my brain? How come no one ever asks me a question?
Right.
How come no one ever says, how do I get here or there? I was writing for the Oscars. No, everyone here wants to do comedy. No one said, how do I get a joke on the Oscars? Like, nobody says anything anymore. I think it's part of a new generation. I think it's a generational thing, but I have no idea why people aren't asking me questions all goddamn day, but they don't ask a fucking question. They sit there and eat, and then I ask them something.
Yeah.
And it's weird that we're not asking, you know, picking everybody's brain to try to make ourselves a little bit better all the time.
Yeah. I think that constantly, I think it's actually surreal how with our technology and how well connected we all are, how absolutely easy it is to become impactful or do the things you want. There's just so many routes. But I think most people's minds at the same time with so much external abundance are constantly searching for just quick things and not actually asking themselves real questions. And most people really are asking themselves questions like, why do I always do this? And when you ask that, your mind will come up with, because you suck, because you always pick the wrong person.
Or what's worse, why does this always happen to me?
Right. And so there's no way you'll get an answer that feels good, except for it'll keep you in your victim-y state. It'll keep you in your old story, because I really believe we got a ton of love when we were kids for being victims or whatever our parents taught us based on their childhood, too. So like
this victim thing, man.
Yeah.
Micro and macro is the most destructive fucking thing you can do to either an individual or a group of people. And I never stop preaching, knock it the fuck off when they're like, as a Latina, as a woman, as an autism spectrum disorder, like, stop it, stop it, stop it. And politicians, stop it.
Right.
It drives me insane.
Well, people add to their victimness that, like, they might say, well, I have this weight issue because I have a thyroid problem. Okay, totally understand, but you also don't have to eat 9 pizzas on top of it.
Right.
Did we talk before this meeting and I forgot about it?
I don't think so.
The reason everyone hates me is because I want fucking Elizabeth Warren to shut the fuck up when she's talking about, she gets out there and she goes, I wish I could tell you it was a level playing field, but it's not. And it's like, stop it. Stop it. And then everyone comes back to me and goes, oh, so you don't think Elon Musk's kids have it better than that bum over there's kids? I'm like, yes, they do. Yes, they do. Yes,
and
they do.
In some ways, in some other ways, they have it worse. Because when you grow up with a lot of abundance, you often don't create a situation where you need to grow. Like, look at child stars.
Yes.
So many child stars, you have it all perfect. And a lot of times you don't have any part of you that goes, oh, I can create this. I have people that are coming to my trailer and giving
Corey
me.
Corey Feldman's thriving, Kyle, stop.
That's true. That's true. But it was from his low in the middle
the
that he overcame it.
Yes. Yeah. Completely.
And, yeah.
And I really just think when you create a victim or somebody feels like a victim, they're stifled right there, right then. And yes, it's what kids want and it's what kids do. Look, I have a couple of 11-year-old twins. They sit around and they go, look at my finger. It's all swollen. I can't do this. You know, I can't do that. I did this. I can't. Right. I don't feel well. I can't go to work. And then we have this stupid. Now, hopefully that ends.
Yeah.
You don't bring it into adulthood, but you can see what's going on college campuses now. They are bringing it into adulthood. And what the worst thing you can do as a parent is yell, oh my God, sit down. I'm calling the doctor and you're not going to school for the week. The best thing you can do as a parent is, I think you'll be fine. Let me tape the one finger to the other finger so it doesn't get screwed up and go to school. It's on your weak hand anyway. You can write with the other hand.
And I love you so much because you know this and you still have an edge, because it found in the comedy scene there was just a lot of why we can't do things, a lot of authenticity, but calling BS on stuff, but we're never calling BS on our doubts or what we're capable of. It's rare. And then you go to the transformational world and they just change their name to Rainbow Maca Sunshine and stop shaving their armpits and give you the long stare and just say, I'm downloading that. And you realize there's no authenticity here, but they are more hopeful, at least in possibility. And I was thinking about with the victim thing, if we all went to another planet and we were each raised by two 20-foot-tall aliens for 20 years and, you know, one of the aliens, for instance, comes home drunk and you can't understand what he's saying, you just realize if I speak out or say what I really am, it gets mad at me. I'll get hurt, right? And let's say the other alien loves it when you tap dance. Like every time you're tap dancing, that alien's like, "Argh," and he's showing the other aliens like – and then you, for 20 years, learn, okay, stay small, don't do anything, be safe. And then if I tap dance, I get love. And then you go out to the rest of the planet and you're tap dancing and you're staying small. And the other aliens are like, "I hate tap dancing." But you like, you get this small story that who you are is that conditioning, that who you are is what you needed to be to not get hurt, to not get abandoned by parents who, remember, some of our parents or their parents were in like the Great Depression. So the most they were saying is just how to survive and not be homeless. And you go back 10 more generations, you're in like slavery. You go back even more, you're in like Viking times. Like there's generations down 100 years, 100 generations that were teaching their kids, you know, grab her by the hair and drag her home. Like that's the training.
Adam says that every day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not even the hair up top.
No.
Of course.
And that comes down into us.
I want to tease something here, Kyle. Think of three things, basic things that people could start doing today.
Sure.
That would really make a difference. And then I'll tell you guys about something to make a difference. Blinds Galore. Oh, yeah. Blinds Galore. They do everything.
That's what I was thinking of.
They do it better.
That's,
all right.
That's one.
So think of two things.
Yeah.
Think of two things. They create 100% custom window treatments built to your exact measurements down to every little detail. Don't bother dragging yourself outside. Get a box of nothing, all pre-packed. Doesn't fit. Right now, get custom blinds and shades, blindsgalore.com. They make it easy. You get the, I have it here. I have it at the warehouse. I have it in the edit bays. I have it in my office. I have it in my bathroom. I have it everywhere. They've covered over 2 million windows. They know what they're doing, and they go up easy. You don't have to be a master carpenter like moi. Just put the bracket up, snap it in. Very easy to do. Let blindsgalore.com help you get the designer shades and blinds you've always wanted at a nice price, not the designer price. Go check them out. Blindsgalore.com. Good sponsors. Great product. Let them know I sent you. All right, Kyle, what do you think?
Well, that's so surreal because the first thing was Blinds Galore.
Right.
I was like, okay, three things people need to know, Blinds Galore. The second thing that I've started to discover for myself is – no matter what, when you're feeling fear, when you're feeling anxiety, when you're going to do something exciting, the only thing that's scary is you're stepping out of your old story that got love for being in that limited place.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever you have anxiety, fear, you're scared of a situation, you're scared you're going to screw it up. Literally, when I say the thing and then follow it with, "and I love that," it goes away.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, it's not our fear that bothers us. I believe it's our resistance to our fear. It's us thinking that we shouldn't be in that situation or shouldn't be thinking that. So if I was going to come on the show and I was thinking, I could totally screw this up, and I love that, all of a sudden I'm not enslaved, because most people think, I hope I don't screw this up, which implies if I do, I'm not enough. I'm limited. I'm not loved. And immediately you go to a state of lack, and then you go into your head to control it. But if you start off with, I could totally screw this up and I love that, I'm going to die alone and I love that, you immediately
that's
make
the name
that
of your
thought.
Next book.
Yeah, that totally that's my prediction for myself. But
I'm gonna get my camera back from that alligator and I love that.
And I love that. Or just, well, that's the fixing from the thought. The thought is the alligator has my camera.
Hold my shoes.
And the given was that that person thought who they was their camera.
Right.
So if you go, that alligator has my camera, and I love that. I love making this ridiculous analogy a totally normal thing.
That's a much prettier way, by the way. I'm going to start saying that because you always hear, feel the fear and do it anyway.
Yeah.
But that's like, okay. But, and I love that, almost makes it more positive.
I have a very small addendum here, or yeah, a little addendum here, which is I, once in a while, like Lynette will say, I can't do this. I have to go to Portland to do a bar, a Mangria bar. And I'll go, you get to do it. Don't have to do it. You do have to do it, but you get to do it.
Yeah.
It's an opportunity. Yeah. Just in the wording, I can tell you how somebody is.
Totally.
I know how somebody is. I go, how you doing? And they go, I'm all right.
Yeah.
They're those people, and it's like, oh, boy, versus great, how you doing, or what's up, going to be better, whatever. It's just get in the habit of saying, doing great.
It's
get in
so
the habit
true.
Of going, I get to do this, not I have to. I have to. Obviously, I have to do it myself. I have to go, oh, I got to go down to the studio and shoot a whatever, shoot a TV show. No, I get to.
So many people make who they are their circumstances. In fact, the biggest difference I've seen between people who are fulfilled and successful and the opposite are the fulfilled and successful people are talking about what's coming up for them as possibilities or what they could do, and they aren't aware of their circumstances that they think are the reason why they can't. And then the other people are only talking about their circumstances. So those are the ones that say, I'd love to go do that, but I have a kid. I'd love to go do that, but I don't have enough time or I don't have enough money. And what I started realizing is the reason you think you can't is the reason you have to. I don't have a kid is a total reason to live in your highest calling and live your gift and write your book and go to Italy to show your kid that they can do it. Or I don't have enough money. Maybe that's because you're not doing the thing that's calling to you that actually would make you more money than if you were keeping a job that you absolutely hate and stays out of alignment with you.
So there's a micro and then there's a macro.
Yeah.
I feel like we're kicking this thing into overdrive with the macro. I mean, I sit here and the guy's probably going to be the governor of California. Gavin Newsom is sitting where you're sitting, and he's explaining to me that, you know, black and brown people don't have access to checking accounts. And I'm like, why not? He said, well, why not? What do you mean? I mean, look at the history. And I'm like, history. What's going on now? And it's like, well, I want to get rid of these predatory check cashing places. I'm like, why don't we work on getting them checking accounts? That seems like the right thing to do, not blaming the business that has popped up because they don't have checking accounts. Or, when it's like every time I hear voter suppression, I'm like, good, let's get them some IDs and then they can show when they vote. Not, we got to get rid of the stupid ID law. There's a lot of people walking around disenfranchised. They don't have access to IDs. They don't have access. It's like, it's not true, but if it was true, as a politician, let's get to the bottom of why they don't have access to IDs, and then I'll tell you what, the ID mobile. It's licensed by the DMV. It'll come to your neighborhood. Yeah. There's a bonded, certified DMV employee who has bonded, certified papers, a ward of the court, and a stenographer, and they're going to roll right in.
And an Oscar Mayer hot dog.
And we'll do it like they do with the roundup days on the paint and the chemicals over at the junior college.
Oh,
you know, take all your Aquanet cans and your oil-based paint and drop it off.
Yep. Yeah.
We'll have the ID mobile. Now, if you're a politician and you're telling me a lot of people don't have IDs, don't have access to IDs, I'm thinking you're lying. But if you go, that's why I have the ID mobile, I go, good.
Right.
Instead, you just go, a lot of people don't have this, and now we got to change something.
Right, and that's the circumstance.
Yeah, that's
so
it. They don't have an ID.
That is so...
They're living in the goddamn United States in 2017. They don't have access. Stop saying access, you fucking pieces of shit. Stop saying it. It's bullshit. Not having access.
It
drives me nuts. Hey, they don't have access to birth control. Yeah. Yes, they have access to birth control. Same way, I don't have access to a fucking hoagie unless I go buy a hoagie. Now I have a hoagie. It's not access, not have. Yeah, no one is bringing me a hoagie. Where is my hoagie? I don't have access to a hoagie.
Yeah, but you have to leave and go
to a place
to get
the hoagie. Turning everyone into fucking victims, you horrible politicians. You are ruining them.
You know,
right,
sometimes
that's just my humble
opinion. Just love. Well, what you're saying
is
so true because we give so much power to everything outside of us, and we say
why
it's because of this
thing.
Well,
I know why you're doing it, Gavin Newsom. You want votes from poor people, and you'd like to keep them there,
right?
God damn. And by the way, these guys should be brought up on fucking charges because you're more dangerous than the fucking Unabomber. The Unabomber took out a couple of college professors. You're taking out whole swaths of people,
right?
Because of this talk. knock it the fuck off, but then you're not going to get the votes.
And educate us on the propositions a little more, because I'm tired of when I get to the voting booth only learning about that proposition based on one paragraph for an argument on each side. In other words, like, you'll watch a year of Hillary and Trump go at it, and then when you get to the voting booth, there's a thousand things to vote on that you know nothing about.
Right.
And I think we need a few that it's just obvious which way to vote right off the bat. Like, we should have just a few, like Proposition 97, should we continue to not eat babies? Like, right there, I'd be like, yeah, I don't want to. I don't have time. They're not delicious. You know, it's not.
It's very controversial.
Slippery slope, because you start with don't eat babies. Right. Next thing you know, don't eat chicken.
Right.
I don't want to live in that world. Do you want to live in a world where you're not allowed to eat chicken?
You're not allowed to eat
your
dogs.
So you and your son, you and your special needs son, walk into a Popeyes, and a bunch of jackboot thugs attack you and drag you to the ground and arrest you and take you to a gulag because you and your special needs son wanted to have some chicken at Popeyes. Do you want to live in that world? I don't.
I think we have the exact same complaint
here, Adam. That's why you vote no.
But the way that they phrase those things when you get to the voting booth, you don't know which way they're voting, because it's always, should we not eat un-babies, not on this un-day? And you're like, that's four negatives, and I don't know if I'd be eating them which way I vote.
So what should we do? Yeah, so macro.
One thing I was going to say is that people love, I was saying, like, to make their outside circumstances the reason they can't. And we do it all over the place. Even when people supposedly become more, quote, spiritual or whatever, they're still blaming outside things, even though they're claiming that it's going inward. So when you're supposedly in this first part, you're going, oh, I couldn't make it because the guy cut me off at work. Now it's Mercury retrograde, right? So we do it with everything. And I remember, in other words, I don't really believe that's a thing, but people love to say, oh, I can't do it today because it's or I'm waiting
for
a sign.
Are you familiar with that, Adam?
I had a woman say to me once. Hold on.
Sure. My mom had a biorhythms wheel. And it'd be like, I'm screwing this up, but I'd go like, hey, can I get a ride to Teddy's house in Van Nuys? Hold on, let me consult the wheel. Ooh, extra critical day.
Right.
I don't think so. It's a great wheel. It's like someone invented a piece of plastic for people who don't want to leave the house.
Right.
And just twist. Oh, boy.
Ask
no,
later.
No.
Or how about this? Oh. I really like that person, but they're a Gemini. How about that? Dude, astrology is
the most accepted
form of prejudice on the planet. If you're now dating someone based on when they were born.
Can I tell you how many people at Ditzy Broads knew, like, oh, you're Gemini. What are you, Gemini? Yeah. I knew it. Oh, really? If you knew it, why didn't you go?
Why? Because you've molded some way to make it work?
I tell people all the time, I have half a personality, not two personalities, number one. Number two, if I know you or something about you, then I will say it.
I'll tell you.
I will tell you you're a Gemini.
Like, have you ever had someone tell you they know what you are, and then they describe that characteristic of that sign, and it's nothing like you? And you'll go, no, that's not me at all. And they go, oh, you must be a Pisces moon rising. Like, they keep adding
the
moons
cusp
to make it fit. Yeah, you're on a cusp then.
I want to.
Cusp means opposite of what I just predicted.
Yeah. There's a topic which is, Kyle sort of hit it and scooted past it, but it's the making excuses, but it's not even a make an excuse. Like, there's an excuse there's an excuse for everything, but I don't even like the in passing excuse. And I everyone thinks I'm a douche, but it would serve them to knock it off. And I'll tell you what it is in 1 second. First, I'll tell you about Smart Mouth Dual Solution Oral Rinse. Only activated mouthwash, clinically proven to instantly eliminate bad breath and prevent it from coming back for 12 full hours. Zinc ion technology binds to bacteria, forcing it to stop producing sulfur gas. That's where the funky town comes in. Nothing ruins an intimate moment as quickly as stinky breath. Doesn't matter if you're working out all day or drive a Lamborghini, whatever. If your mouth smells like wet garbage, that is a deal breaker. And it ruins the social situations, sabotage relationships, career prospects. You sit in a job interview with the funky breath, they don't want to hire you. Well, you don't want to work with that every day. So get the Smart Mouth. Drew knows the science. He loves this stuff. It's the two-parter, man. SmartMouth.com or find at Walmart, Target, Walgreens, CVS, wherever you want. It is Smart Mouth at smartmouth.com. So the reason I'm a douche is because once in a while, one of the kids around here, I'll go like, Gary, you put up the wrong plug. And he'll go, yeah, sorry, I'm sick. And I'll go to say, yeah, I'm sorry, we're moving on. But don't say I'm sick, because that's got nothing to do. That's got nothing to do with this. But I don't really care.
It implies helplessness, right?
Just don't get in the habit of saying, yeah, I'm sick. Now, look, if there's a five-car pileup on the 405 and they stop the freeway and people are getting out of their cars, you're late. I mean, yeah, that's, you're allowed to say that. But the little added stuff like that, we just sort of imply you're not it, whatever, it's not good for you. It doesn't, it's not information that helps me, but it doesn't help you.
But
that's
even if
what
it's,
I'm saying.
If yeah, it's an explanation that why your head's just kind of not screwed on straight in that moment.
You can be on a gallon of Robitussin and not quite in your right space, but that doesn't, it's still, it's a neither here nor there thing, and it's probably not a good idea to even, yeah, it's, you know what it's, yeah.
There are a few people in this building who can tell you message received.
Yes, but here's the thing. When there is a mistake or a screw up or whatever, it's the impulse to go, let me explain that away, or let me tell you why, or let me whatever.
No, right. I'm saying you've coached me up. Since that incident you're talking about, there have been other incidents where that has not been applied.
Well, you never knew.
Hmm. Well, not for me. It's always for you, because whatever.
No,
because
I do it
you're,
for myself.
Yes, you're in, what comes in is, hey, man, hopefully what comes in is, you're not a screw up, but you did screw this up. And then your reaction, it's almost like a seesaw. Somebody mm-hmm. puts weight on one side and you start to rise up. Hey, man, I was sick, or I got up, or I, whatever.
Yeah.
So when you meet this, hey, you didn't execute this correctly with, oh, poor Matt Fondalier, my sister, said, I did my best. I said, don't ever say that. You yeah. just screwed this thing up. And he doesn't. That's where don't do your best, do my best came in. But
right.
if the seesaw starts pushing down and what starts rising up is, I was sick, or I did my best, or I told, whatever that is, it's the opposite of correction.
Right.
And there will be no correction, because
right.
I start pushing down on one end of the seesaw. You screwed this up. What starts coming up is, I'm sick, or I did my best. Thus, no answer, no solution, no correction.
Yeah.
The only correction is, you're right, not going to happen again.
Yeah. Well, it implies helplessness. So
yes.
There's no way for ownership to change it, right? So there's a couple people on my team, and I actually really only choose, as much as I consciously can, to work with people that I can hear in their dialogue only have that ownership, and things move so much faster. Like there's people on my team, Carrie and Dan, where if there's any errors at all, there's one, they usually come to me before I catch it and own it. And I watch them adjust over and over and over again and become totally self-fulfilled, because once you're not blaming outside for your problems, you're also not needing outside for your success too. And you start to realize you run the whole thing. And the huge illusion is, people always think, when I finally get that agent, I'll be an actor. When I finally get, and they're not just acting right now, or they're not just starting and creating. And I actually think the more you feel codependent on something, the less you're going to create anything, because you're constantly thinking that's the reason why. And so I love to let go of all of those things and let go of everything I think I need outside of me and create on such a higher level. But the people on my team, the people that we work with, we only work with people, even clients, we only work with people that are fully owning their emotions, where they are and what they want to do, versus owning, like, I can't do it because of, like, that sentence is, everyone has the ability to have that sentence. And the people that don't take that sentence in, I can't do it because of this, those become the most successful people. And fulfilled people, because you're saying, I'm responsible for everything.
Are you going to say something, Gina?
That just made me think how many friendships I have sort of, I'll say, lovingly let go
yes.
of, because there are so many people who are so negative. They come to you in seeming like they want help to, you know, collaborate to figure out how to get over this hill. And all you do is just drain yourself by offering suggestions, asking questions, and they just fire back with, I can't because, I can't because, I can't because.
When you're letting go of something, you're scared. And the only reason you're scared is because your mind can measure what it will lose, but it can't see what you'll gain. So if you're going through a breakup, you're sad because you're focused on the loss of one person versus the gain of 7.4 billion people if you're bisexual willing to date everybody. So, but there's all these opportunities, but our mind is only focused on the old story and it can't see the new thing that's trying to come through. And it's just scared to do something it's never done. And it's not even scared of that. It's scared to choose to do that thing. Like when people go skydiving, they always say the scariest moment is when I'm looking over the side of the plane. But that moment, you're safe.
Right.
They say, when I jump and I'm hurling through the air at 10,000 miles an hour, I'll be fine. So you're not scared to step into the new thing. You're scared to let go of the old thing and have the choice. And it's really weird to start to discover that and then see a world of people that are choosing that victim world to stay in the small story, because people would rather be, you know, right than happy. People would rather stay in their old thing. And that's a choice every second.
Well, also, as I was just reliving something that happened this morning, there's another thing that many people I know do. And now, understand that almost all of this is something that almost all kids possess. So when you see an adult who possesses this, it's not like, where did you come across this horrible trait? It's more like, why didn't you get rid of this horrible trait?
Because it's not a part of you.
Six-year-olds, most all six-year-olds have it. You know, what happened? There's a big puddle. They don't say, I spilt the milk. They go, the milk spilt.
Right.
As if they had nothing to do with it. And you have to have this conversation. But you were using a tall glass, and I told you not to do that, and blah, blah, blah. But there's this interesting thing that almost everyone does. It happened to me this morning, where you're letting your mind or your wishes take control of your schedule and your narrative, which is this. I got a bunch of junk going on at my house. And I knew I was leaving for Washington State this morning. We're doing an early show. I had a morning interview, and I was going to pack and out of the house early. So when Rob, the guy's kind of leading the crew over there, said, what's the call time for tomorrow morning? And I'll move it around a little bit depending on who's doing what or the kids and the wife. And I said, the wife and kids are out of town. I got an early morning. I'm up and out, 8 a.m. And he said, okay. And Rob showed up at 7:55. Then the other guy showed up at 8. And then where's Nick? Nick's the guy who works here. And now I'm getting ready to leave, and it's about 8:30, and where's Nick? And Rob, now, and Nick's not a flaky guy. That's why I had him come over and get some work done. But Rob sent him a text, and then Nick called him back right before I left. And then Nick said this: don't ever say this. Don't ever do this. Don't ever be this. But this is what Nick said: I thought you said 8:30. And Rob said, you were standing right next to Adam when he said 8 o'clock. Now, Nick's call times here are more 10 a.m. Mm-hmm. Not saying he's lazy. I'm just saying people here are on a little more of a 10 to 5 or 6 schedule and a little less on an 8 to 3:30 schedule. He lives in Hollywood. He has to take an Uber. For Nick to get to my place at 8 is an early call for a guy who doesn't do a lot of early calls. So he didn't want to be there at 8. Now, how do you reconcile not wanting to get up at 6:45 versus that? You simply go, I thought you said 8:30. But if you really examine that statement, and I do this all the goddamn time with everybody, how is it you thought I said 8:30 if it never came out of my mouth and the other two guys that were standing there heard 8 a.m.?
Right.
And we're here. So there's three people.
So it's a
and you're one
creation
of them,
completed.
And you heard me say 8:30. That's what you heard me say? No, you didn't hear me say that, because first off, it's mathematically impossible, because I did not say 8:30.
Say that. Yeah.
And these two guys would be here, or actually not be here yet.
Right.
They would be here at 8:30, because all three would go, you said 8:30. Yeah. But these guys heard 8.
Right.
Because that's what I said.
That's what you
now,
said.
Now here's the question. Do you actually think I said 8:30? Or did you want the extra half hour sleep? Or are you that disconnected that you don't know?
Yeah.
That your brain just went, hey, man, I'm setting my alarm for 7:30, not 6:30, or whatever it is. I believe there are a lot of people that have this chasm between their brain and what it wants in reality. And they literally, I get it all day long. Hey, we're supposed to meet it. You said over. It's like, I did not say that.
Yeah.
I didn't say that. Oh, yes, you did. And
I'll
then
give the Kyle answer. They manifested it.
Oh, my God. I would
never say
that.
The greatest one. It's funny. My wife said this to me once, but it was funny. She went, I wish I had a tape running all the time so I could tell. And I said, that might be good for you in this particular instance, but big picture,
yeah,
it'd be bad.
Yeah.
And she like went, okay, yeah, probably not.
Scratch the tape.
Scratch the tape.
Well, then that's the habit, too. It's almost like I'm so scared to...
So why does Nick say he heard 8:30?
Because the habit of the world that most people have, and by the way, it's totally changeable, but the habit of the world, I think, is... It's just find the thing to blame. Find an outside thing. And it could be that he actually really did think it was 8:30. I also would love to have heard how he delivered it to you.
It's impossible that he heard 8:30.
Right. Right.
It
is possible
that he wanted to sleep a little more.
What I mean is remembered 8:30 or so, or later. But I get what you... I agree with you.
Yeah, the question is saying, I remember my cock being really wide.
Well, did he say it like this? Because was there actual, I am so sorry, somehow... Something got in, and it started later scrambling in my mind where the thing you said was 8:30, and I actually am sorry, or was it like this kind of look away? Oh, I thought it was 8:30, which is like the sentence that fulfills it on such a small level.
I have no idea. I didn't speak to him.
Right.
And Nick's a good guy, and he's a hardworking guy, and I like Nick. I run into this a lot where I go, I thought you said, and yeah. It's like, how could I say we were leaving LAX when I got a ticket for Burbank Airport?
Right.
I would have never said that. Well, I heard LAX.
And that wouldn't work there, by the way. You can't go there and think, right. I thought this flight took off at 11,
right.
So bring the plane
chop,
back.
Chop. Yeah.
Never said it. So right. I do, there's a lot, so just drilling down, there is a lot of, I thought you said this, or to be more concise, you said this. Like, I get a lot of, you said this.
I've had that
and
too.
I go, I'm the sanest person in this room, and I did not say that.
Yeah.
And then there's another one, which is, oh, I definitely told you the maids were coming this morning. And I'm like, I would not be in my underpants and be surprised standing by the front door if you told me that. I told you last night. Like, it's like, no, you did not. But there's a weird chasm. Mm-hmm. And I think it's weird because I thought computers were going to take care of all this. It's growing greater. People's weird disconnection of like, I definitely told you this, and you definitely heard you say that. And I usually say to people when they go, I told you I was going to be there. I go, what was my response? You said, okay. Okay. So why am I feeling like, what the hell the maids? What? Then there's a knock on the door and I'm surprised. Why am I surprised? Well, you must have forgot.
Well,
it's
and
a
it's-
weird.
It's, yeah. I think there's a definite link between, Kyle talking about, and we talking a lot about external versus internal. Well, now with devices, it's literally all external. There's no, we're not wired to be accountable inside because we got something. It'll remember it for us. Maybe it will, maybe it won't.
Gina, that was really insightful, what I just made you say. Which is the
they were going to say what I said.
Like, he agrees with
what
him.
What I said was great.
No, that was really insightful, which is, it is literally externalizing holding the smartphone.
Yeah.
And all day and staring at the computer, and we are now getting deeper into externalization. And the only path to cure or any kind of success is internalization.
Right.
And people treat internalization like it has to be some sort of bag fest. Like, oh, you're so stupid, you're fat, you're dumb. No, you don't have to do any of that. Just go, you screwed up. It's not going to happen again.
Yeah. The biggest, there was an actual really notable shift in my life where all of my results externally changed when I went internal. And this is what I did. I decided to declare to my following that I was going to do 100 days of every morning before I did anything. I'm going to sit on my bed and just close my eyes for an hour. I don't even like meditation because it's a loaded word. People are thinking, put on the right beads and say om. And
right.
I just sit and all these thoughts come up, right? And this thought going, oh, you're going to do an hour? And then I just sit there and be okay with it. And then another thought comes, I can't do this. This is stupid. And then another thought comes like, I have so much crap I have to do today. So I keep going. And then eventually at the end of that, I realize I don't have to do any of that stuff. Because as I connect to myself, the part of me that thinks who I am is some people pleaser or I need to fix all these circumstances actually starts to die because I'm connecting to this internal part of me that actually like loves the scared thoughts and becomes the mother or father of that child that's scared.
Right.
And by being okay with it and being a space for it, those thoughts leave. And because they'll stay there if you keep resisting them. So I go internal. And then all of a sudden, all day, I'm not doing things that I think I have to do. And all my alignment changes because I suddenly only take on the things that I want to do. And I'm not in a place of addiction anymore, because addiction is what you used something outside of yourself to get you in the moment. But as I connect to myself, I get that I just am this moment.
You clear out that room.
I clear out this room. And all of a sudden, I started saying no to gigs that didn't fulfill me. I started saying no to relationships that didn't align. And it was so weird because I was just in this place of just higher alignment, which sounds like a corny term, but I really only, I could see through everyone's BS. I could see through all the people pleasers. I could see through all the control freaks. And I was in this new state. And that was when I really started to take off career-wise and everything else, because the unworthy part of me died. And I was doing what I wanted to do, and I didn't care what people would say. I was oblivious to it, because they could only trigger those mind fear-based thoughts that I've already released.
Well,
so it's pretty deep and crazy, but that's how I connected inward and just went from a consumer to a creator almost. So
all right, I love it. I love the message, and I love Life Lock. Ever get these scary flashing pop-up virus alerts? Probably a tech support scammer trying to get you to call their toll-free number and trick you into giving them remote access to your computer. Identity theft. It's America's fastest growing crime. That's why I have LifeLock. My kids have LifeLock. My wife has LifeLock. Told Nick he had LifeLock. He said, no, you have LifeLock.
Oh, it's true.
Yeah. LifeLock scans hundreds of millions of transactions each second. If they detect your info, they send you an alert. If you have a problem, their U.S.-based agents will work to fix it. They are that good. They are LifeLock. No one can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all business, but LifeLock is the best protection available. And good news, membership starts at just $9.99. It's 2017, people. Let's protect our identity with LifeLock. Dawson.
Like, go to LifeLock.com or call 1-800-LifeLock and use promo code Adam. That's Adam for 10% off your LifeLock Ultimate Plus membership. Visit LifeLock.com and save 10% now.
Irvine Improv, couple tickets left. Thursday, coming up this Thursday. Oh, he sells out. Dennis Prager up on stage with us there. Go to AdamCarolla.com. Check out No Safe Spaces and the books and the movies and all the good, good stuff. Kyle Cease, I hope I screw this up. How falling in love with your fears can change the world. It's available now on Amazon. Go ahead and bookmark us and click through our site. Show a little love, get a little juju. And also, Evolving Out Loud, September 9th and 10th. That is tickets available at his website. Use the promo code Adam. Get the tickets for just $99 out here in Glendale at the Alex Theater. Great to see you again, Kyle.
It's so fun to be here with you, man. Thank you so much for having me.
Great attitude, man. Until next time, Adam Carolla for Kyle Cease and Gina Grad saying mahalo.
Follow the Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow us on Twitter at Adam Carolla. If you'd like to leave us a voicemail, please do it. 888-634-1744. Gina Grad is on the radio weekday mornings at 100.3 The Sound in L.A. And for tickets and info on everything, including the Carolla Cruise in November, go to AdamCarolla.com.
The best in paranormal talk radio is here on Podcast One as part of the Jericho Network. Beyond the Darkness examines all aspects of the supernatural every day, Monday through Friday. And now, the same team behind Beyond the Darkness bring you the most frighteningly real-life dramas on True Crime Tuesday. Subscribe now by visiting darknessradio.com. Then, click the True Crime Tuesday banner. Again, that's True Crime Tuesday. Visit darknessradio.com and click the True Crime Tuesday banner. Subscribe now.